subcommittee. It's late and seems to get later. Is it becoming like we're later in the session and all of a sudden things start to slow down? I mean, here it is, the middle of February almost. Karen Segrist is our clerk today, and from Legislative Fiscal Office, we're represented by Dallas Wyand, our Legislative Fiscal Officer for the day. And today we're scheduled for public testimony, and we do have Bob Russell from the Oregon Trucking Association. And Bob, would you like to go ahead and come forward? Aaron, sign in, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Association, and I appreciate the opportunity to come before you this morning. We have a little issue that we'd like to discuss. Many of you are familiar with Oregon's cost allocation study. It's the method that we use to determine how much cars should pay and how much trucks should pay into our state highway fund. It sort of balances the books, so to speak. Oregon has been doing them longer than any state in the nation. We did our first cost allocation study in 1937. Quite frankly, in the old days, the trucking industry wasn't terribly concerned about the cost allocation study because our rates were regulated. If our taxes went up, we went to the Public Utility Commission and said, please increase our rates that we charge our shippers, and they said, sure, and everything was fine. But in 1995, Congress deregulated the trucking industry in all the states, and so now we have a whole different ballgame. In 1997, there was no cost allocation study done in Oregon. In 1998, then-Director Grace Cronican actually moved the cost allocation study from the Department of Transportation to the Department of Administrative Services. And the Department of Administrative Services conducted that study using independent contractors and reported to the 1999 legislature. The same process was utilized in 2001, and again in current biennium, the Department of Administrative Services also conducted the cost allocation study. When DAS's budget was initially drafted, there wasn't provision to do the cost allocation study going forward. And so what I'm asking is that we keep the cost allocation study at the Department of Administrative Services, and it is a perception issue. Because the cost allocation study determines highway use tax rates, there is a perception that it would be difficult for the Department of Transportation to do a fair study because their revenues are dependent on the results of the study. And it's no commentary whatsoever on the people at the Department of Transportation. They do an excellent job. It's just it facilitates the whole system if we've got an independent agency conducting the study.
Are there questions of Mr. Russell?
Chairman.
Senator Devlin, please.
Mr. Chairman, actually more of a statement. I was on the Transportation Committee in two of the last three sessions before this, and we spent a great deal of time on cost allocation study. To my knowledge, it may be the only, there might be one other, but I think it is the only portion of the transportation package that passed in 99 that is still intact in terms of there was a constitutional amendment to put the cost allocation study requirement in the Constitution, which was, I think, passed by a fairly good margin. It is a very divisive issue in a sense. I mean, not only, in the trucking industry, I think it's a divisive issue in the sense of between different classes of trucks in terms of, and some, I don't know, concern about whether it should be in a completely independent versus an agency that may not have the appearance of being independent. And when you get to the outside world, there's always this perception. I mean, I think Mr. Russell's heard it 50 times probably in the last year, that trucks are paying too little from the general public. And
at least
the public. and so keeping the study actually in a quasi-independent agency, I think, is a very good idea.
Thank you very much.
Continue.
Senator Devlin. and I understand that ODOT had Mr. Marsh here earlier, Mike Marsh, and indicated he had indicated to the Legislative Fiscal Office that they didn't have a problem going ahead and allowing it to stay with the Department of Administrative Services as opposed to transferring it back to the Department of Transportation, and would make certain that there were sufficient resources to continue to meet that fiscal obligation as well. If there are no further questions, thank you very much,
thank
Bob.
You.
Appreciate
sure.
you coming forward, and that certainly appears that we'll take that under advice during work session. Yesterday, following everything else that got done, we sequestered ourselves for a few minutes to discuss the 10% reductions, House Bill 3182 reductions, and Senator Johnson, or Representative Johnson, is presently in with Senator Schrader and others right now working on some of the issues dealing with the House Bill 3182 reductions. And I don't know whether we want to spend the time now or just be aware, the beginning of page 264 in the large binder is the House Bill 3182 reduction list that are being proffered up there. And that would give us an opportunity to go through and study those issues. Any comments or questions or discussion following our rather lengthy discussion of the matrix that we talked about yesterday, be aware that there are other matrices out there that are being used and presently have been filled out, I understand, by the agency for the cost reductions with some rather detailed information, which we did not access. They're not in our books just yet. We'll be using those during work session. Dallas, do you have anything further for today?
No, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I would like to at least try to summarize where I think you want us to go between now and whenever work session is. The issue this morning, we will, the money is not in the budget for the Department of Administrative Services to conduct the cost study, the allocation study. Part of the work session, we will develop those numbers and work also with the Department of Transportation to make sure that we've settled on an appropriate amount to be transferred to cover the cost of that. We with respect to the public hearing portions for the different divisions, there are in place, and just a rather recent one, a day or two ago, a governor's directive to roll back the 3% increase for certain managers' levels. We will build that into the freeze that we are currently working on for all the steps 38, as well as the merit freeze of all positions in for the 0305 that basically, and I think they'll be working those into bargaining unit agreements too. That's the presumption, but I mean these are all that you can freeze will be frozen. We will price that out. Zero inflation for services and supplies and capital outlays. As was mentioned, there was a 3.5% inflation assumption that was taken out for what's called the Big Eight agencies, and they, in part because there simply wasn't time to do it for all agencies. The decision was made too late in the process. When it was decided we would go forward with that, we will be working with budget management.
What's your time frame to work on that?
Cora can address this better than I. I know she's been working with Larry Nieswander.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Cora Parker from the Department of Administrative Services. With respect to the merit freeze and 3% rollback for managers, we are working with the SABRES unit, that's a statewide audit budget reporting unit in the Budget Management Division. They are actually the ones that have all the data behind both personnel and the budget system, the ones that produce the reports that you see in your budget documents. they've written code to be able to piece out where vacant positions are, pull out the merits that we had originally assumed would have been in your budgeted figures. And right now we're in a test process to make sure we're working with some smaller agencies where we can do a manual calculation on one side and test the code that way to make sure that it's producing what we expect it to produce. And then we'll start rolling it out for all agencies so that we can work with LFO to incorporate that into your work session.
Great.
Question,
Senator.
The governor also planning to meet with the union to open up negotiations on some of those contracts in light of the 3% rollback of managers?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, with respect to the 3% rollback on managers, those would not be covered in the union contracts.
But during, I'll go back in history and time, when we had the similar economic downturn, in fact, it was a little more severe than this one, in the Attila years, we actually did get an agreement and worked with the unions to get them to reopen up contract negotiations.
My understanding is that contract negotiations are still open right now, and so certainly a number of different things are on the table. I don't know if that specific item is being brought forward or not. Director Weeks can probably speak to it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Gary Weeks, Director of the Department of Administrative Services, and Mr. Chairman and Senator Winters, in response to your question, all contracts are open right now, and bargaining is going on.
For what period, Gary?
They're all open, being negotiated for the next 2 years.
They're
not open for the current biennium. That's correct. We're opening in under standard process, and so the bargaining process is underway. And we're following the governor's instructions right now in the budget that there are no wage increases, cost of living adjustments, step increases, and the step increases are actually built in for the contract. So you have to negotiate the step language.
Senator Devlin's recognized. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding, too, is that obviously issues of wages and issues of benefits are both mandatory subjects of bargaining. So where the state can sometimes maintain that an issue is not a bargaining issue, those are two that you can't take that stance, actually.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, that's correct. The benefits and the wages are both subject to bargaining, and we're in bargaining on those and other issues. So.
Some working conditions are permissive issues, but those two are not.
are not bargaining issues.
They are mandatory. They can't refuse to bargain on those.
Oh, they cannot refuse to bargain. Okay, thank you. That's
Mr. Chair.
Senator Winters.
I raised that because with the severity of the issue in the previous climate when this occurred, the unions did come to the table and recognizing that benefits and those contract and wages are part of the contract negotiations, but they can, through their membership, if they so choose, to open those up and say, we too will be a part of the whole piece of government. We recognize that there is a critical problem, and we're willing to take our piece as well. So, and not to say that they cannot, but it's up to them to make those negotiations.
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the interesting issues, and this may not be entirely accurate because there are people that transfer from one position to another that have a considerable more time in terms of seniority, but the odd thing about the step increases, given our current financial condition, is in some ways, if we don't get some slowing down of at least the step increases, the people that are going to be laid off are the people that are still subject to step increases, because it's the lower seniority employees that are still subject to step increases that will be the ones that will usually be laid off in most, at least in most represented employees.
Step increases go on for a period of what? Nearly 10 years.
7 years, I think.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, there's generally 6-7 steps.
Yeah.
And some classes actually have extended ranges where there are more than 6-7 steps, and they run 4.75% of the salary is what the step is. And I think Senator Devlin's correct. in a layoff environment where seniority determines who's going to be laid off, the more senior members are probably, in fact, at the top of the salary range, so they're not eligible for steps, because once you hit the top of the range, there are no more step increases.
Pretty bleak situation as we, I think Senator Devlin, and I wrote it down yesterday, it's back in my office, budgeting for a time of not crisis, but austerity. Anyway.
Well, I don't know. It was something about, like, budgeting for a short-term crisis is different from budgeting for long-term austerity.
and it was profound. I wrote it down. I wish I could have memorized it between yesterday and today. I referred back to it several times, Senator. I appreciate it. I'll go back up and look at it again, and I'll remind you what you said. But it does differentiate the sources that we're looking at right now, and we have thought that we were in a short-term budget crisis, but now it appears to be a more of a prolonged series of
Mr. Chair, just a question to Mr. Weeks. Is there flexibility in the percentage of the step increases?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, there isn't flexibility. You can't decide that a step is going to be 2.5%, particularly, I mean, represented employees, that's all part of the...
That's part of the contract negotiation.
You can, Senator Winters and Mr. Chairman, you may choose not to give a step increase. I mean, that's one of the things that's always sort of troubled me about our system. It's called a merit increase, but there are very few times where the increase isn't given. It's probably more correctly called a longevity step, you know, each year. You can get a step increase, and it's not withheld very frequently. So, and I do remember, Senator, the time that you were describing under the ATIA administration, managers took a 2% wage reduction, and represented employees actually got an additional day or day and a half, if I remember this right, of vacation. They didn't take a wage reduction, but the management, all the management staff did for a period of the entire biennium.
Also what we did, that was when we changed the method in which we did the purse.
Yeah.
I'm going to mess up.
Maybe we're in trouble today, Senator.
Well, didn't no one say that it was to go on forever?
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the things about the step increases, and the state is obviously not an individual school district, but I had one of my school districts that had a very bad experience with this. They tried to freeze steps, which they did, and they got actually the employees' approval in terms of through the collective bargaining process to freeze steps. They kept doing that for a number of years. And what started happening is surrounding school districts started hiring their teachers, because teachers with, at their various levels of experience were making considerably more in surrounding school districts. And the other thing that what happened is that when they finally decided they couldn't actually have this sort of outflow of teachers anymore, and the only way to retain them was to grant the step increases that had not been granted, the factor in that 1 year or 2 years where they tried to bring everybody back up to where they would have been historically if they'd had the step increases was phenomenal. And in the sense of the public relations part of that, of, you know, employees getting those significant raises where some of them had not had a step increase, I think in at least 3 years, 4 years, was a very difficult public relations issue for the district. Because people don't remember why it was done. You know, they only remember that teachers were getting this much increase in that 1 year.
There is the other issue of the new hires, which is within the current, those folks who have moved into positions which were vacant. And let's see, seniority follows those folks, does it not, from one position to another within the state?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, their seniority follows, but if there's layoffs and there are bumping, those people can bump, but they'll bump back down to the next level that they had. They retain rights at the lower level.
So if they moved in from Bend to Salem, they might get bumped in Salem, but they're bumped back to Bend.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it could be back to Bend or any other position located anywhere within the system, and that's one of the things, frankly, that an agency like DHS is really struggling with. With so many layoffs, you can have all kinds of bumping going on more than once or twice from the same individual being bumped from here, and then they take a job, and then they're bumped again, and so it takes a while for it to all settle out, and that's why they really struggle to forecast, you know, how much are we going to save, because they don't know where everybody's going to land eventually.
Right.
So.
Okay. And very complex. Senator Winters?
Mr. Chair, and that becomes a nightmare when you're looking at human services, because you're talking statewide. They could end up from Portland down in Lakeview someplace.
Well,
and then it's, do I pick my family up and go down, or do I stay and try to take the chance of...
The human element in that process has got to be devastating to people for packing their families up and then not having any certainty once they do get shipped off to somewhere else that they're not going to be bumped another time from there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, anybody that comes out to Eastern Oregon, nobody wants to bump them because it's such a desolate and a hard place to live, I guess, in some respects.
Mr. Chair, that was also another reason why, you know, some of the employees' preference is that that they too would take less so that their colleagues could stay in the system.
Well, and that's, and this is all on public record, and I guess I'm just going to go ahead and say it, that it seems that there's been, and I don't need any comment back from any of the agencies certainly on this, but it just seems to me, in the few years that I've been involved in public employment, back within my exposure in the early days of volunteering in my city and school and those kinds of things, and then volunteering and eventually becoming a county commissioner, that the whole paradigm has changed. We used to, when there was this kind of a crisis locally, at least, we used to be able to kind of sort that out, and everybody would say, well, wait a minute, I don't want to see the newest person go. I'd rather we all take some cuts. And I was visiting with one of my county commissioners from a different district, but a county commissioner, former of a county commissioner, and he said that they had a similar fiscal issue in their county. And the three people that were involved all sat down and said, wait a minute, I've got seniority, but I don't have any kids in school. I don't have kids I've got to worry about for college. Why don't I take off a time without pay? And that one of the newer ones that was on the job, or one of the three was going to go, they finally decided that one of the newer ones was going to stay on. And I think that happened, Senator Winters, in your experience back in the 80s, in the early 80s, that folks would work that out so as to benefit one another. I believe personally, and this isn't, I probably shouldn't even venture here while we're under gavel, but I believe personally that probably some of the issues in PERS has changed the entire paradigm where the system appears to be sinking as a result of this enormous millstone in the bottom of the ship. And we're taking on water pretty rapidly. And rather than looking out for the fellow employees, it appears that we're doing some things that we just haven't ever done before. People are not looking out for one another within the system as much. And that's a unique experience for me to see that going on, because it's just never occurred. And I think your experience and Director Weeks, you were here during that time, I understand too that folks seem to have a little bit more concern about their fellow employees, and that may be my perception of it right now with the problems that we've got within the PERS. I've got a lot of folks that are saying, you can't change me because I retired at this point in my career, don't do anything to damage me now. And that's certainly understandable, but it's a whole different paradigm than I've ever been exposed to in any of my prior work experience in history. With that, thank you very much. We'll go ahead and gavel this meeting closed.
Thank you, Dallas.